Our text this afternoon is found in Joshua 14, and it's the words of verse 12. Now therefore give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day. For thou heardst in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. Now, you'll notice we've skipped over a couple of chapters, and we've come to chapter 14, and by the time we reach this chapter, the land of Canaan has largely been subdued by Joshua and the children of Israel. Joshua has taken his army, and they have gained control over the whole land. They have accomplished that by destroying the key cities and the kings and their people. And once those major cities have fallen, Joshua then begins to assign to each tribe their inheritance within the land. And then the tribes would go to that allotted country and then root out the rest of the inhabitants that remain there. The great work has been done, and just a little remains for each individual tribe in their own land. One of the first to claim their inheritance was Joshua's great friend Caleb. And he approaches on to Joshua and he asks for his portion of inheritance. Right from the very beginning, when we are first introduced to Caleb, he is a man who is marked by a faithfulness to the Lord, and a fearfulness of God, and a fruitfulness in his life unto the Lord. And here in verse 12, we hear his intent for the rest of his days. Now therefore give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day. So I want to look for a few moments this afternoon at the life of Caleb, breaking it down into three different stages of his life, and I trust that they will be an encouragement to us. I want you to think firstly about Caleb's first years, when he's first introduced to us in the scriptures. We don't know very much about him. We're not told a great deal about this man. He's mentioned only a handful of times in the scriptures, but those references all teach us something very wonderful about this man. His first years are made known to us in the book of Numbers, chapter 13. And the first glimpse we have of Caleb is at a place called Kadesh Barnea, and he's 40 years of age. We might say that he is at the height of his manhood. We know very little about him or his upbringing, but he has been chosen as one of the 12 spies to go into the land of Canaan to search it out and to bring back a report to Moses and the children of Israel. Now, interestingly, in Numbers chapter 13 and the verse 6, and we're told this concerning Caleb, and that of the tribe of Judah, Caleb the son of Jephunneh was chosen. The men that were chosen to spy out the land were leaders within their tribes, princes of the tribes, if you like. And so we see that even as a young man, and I say young, who's 40 is young, he's a man who's capable and responsible. And he's sent into the land of Canaan, and when he's there, he searches out the land and he wants to bring back a faithful report to Moses and his people. And you're familiar with that story, no doubt. Caleb summarizes it for us there in verse 7 of our text. He says, 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land. And I brought him again word that was in my heart. Brought him back a faithful report. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt. Caleb, who went out with the other spies with the purpose of surveying the land, their purpose wasn't to determine whether or not they could take the land militarily, because God has already promised to give them the land. His purpose was to spy out the land, to gather facts about it. However, when the 12 spies came back, there were two reports, a majority report and a minority report, both of widely different opinions. The first was a popular consensus. There were 10 out of the 12 spies who brought back a report that we are not able to go up against, for they're stronger than we are. And they brought an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is of a land that eats up its inhabitants. And the people that we saw in it are men of great stature, and we saw giants there, the sons of Anak, which became giants, and we were as in our sight grasshoppers before them. That's what they said. Caleb said to Joshua, they made the hearts of the people melt. Their report brought fear into the hearts of the people that they were afraid to go up, and they actually missed out on enjoying the land that God had given to them. But Joshua, you know that you and I were there, and we brought a different report. We reminded the people that God is able, and if he's promised to give us the land, he's able to fulfill that promise. Their report said the land looks good, but there's no way we can possess it. The giants are too big and we are too little. And our report, Numbers 13 and verse 30, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. He said, I brought back the report that was in my heart. The God-honoring report. Caleb was a man of conviction that God was able. You see, the majority had measured the giants against their own strength. Joshua and Caleb measured the giants against God. The 10 spies had great giants and a little God, and Joshua and Caleb had a great God and therefore little giants to face. And Joshua and Caleb's report honored God and pleased God because they were trusting in him. And God extended the land of promise to them, that while everyone else above the age of 40 would die in the wilderness and not take possession of the land, Joshua and Caleb were the only two exceptions. So from his youth he was a man of great convictions, willing to go against the tide of popular opinion and remained faithful to the Lord of heaven, even though it may have meant his life, because the people would have stoned him if they could. Oh, to be a man like Caleb, a man of faith, a man of trust, a man who's wholly following the Lord, our goal being to live not by sight but by faith. And if God has said it, that settles it for us. And if God will guide us to this location, he will certainly provide for us the way to obtain it. Too often, we're willing only to trust God when we think we've got it all figured out. And we're not really living by faith, but we're living by sight. But Caleb was a man of faith. And even when there seemed to be no way, and even though there were giants ahead of them, faith doesn't look at what we can do, it looks at what God can do, and trusts him in spite of how impossible it might seem. Faith will often possess more questions than answers, but we are looking to the one who has all the answers. We seek to follow the Lord. I think of the words of the hymn that reminds us, faith, mighty faith, the promise sees and looks to that alone, laughs at the impossibilities and cries, it shall be done. Those who do not live by faith have big giants and a little God. Those who do live by faith have a big God and little giants. Let's be like Caleb. Let's realize that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. In spite of the fact that we're up against principalities and powers that seem to be so vast and overwhelming that they are as nothing before our God. So Caleb in his first years is a man that we could certainly learn a great deal from. But I want you to think not only of his first years, but what I'm going to call his finest years. His finest years. Now, his finest years were not the years he spent in his 40s, or his 50s, or even his 60s. I'm going to suggest to you his finest years actually came in his 80s. He wasn't at his finest when he spied out the land and came back with a report that revealed his faith in God. His finest hours are here in Joshua 14, when at the age of 85, he still wants to make great strides forward and progress for the Lord. Look at his desire there in verse 9. We read that Moses swore on that day, saying, "Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive these 45 years, ever since the Lord spake his word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, I am this day 85 years old," 85 years of age, "and yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war, both to go out and to come in." At 85 years of age, look at what he's asking for. He's asking for the toughest assignment that there is in all the land of Canaan. That's what he's asking for. The hardest assignment available at 85 years of age. You might have expected a man of 85 to come to Joshua in order to receive his inheritance and say something like this: "You know, Joshua, I've been faithful all my days, and all these years I've done my bit for the Lord, and now it's time for me to take it easy. And Joshua, perhaps you might see that my inheritance will have a nice little cottage somewhere, and a little garden that I can plant some flowers and some vegetables and just sit back and enjoy the last few years that the Lord might be pleased to give me." That's not what he asked for. Look at his request there in verse 12. "Now therefore give me this mountain." This isn't a request for a life of luxury or a few short years of ease. He's asking for something difficult. He's asking for the mountain. He wants to go and claim the mountain. He's not looking to retire. He's looking to refire. Life on this mountain is not going to be easy. He reminds us in verse 12 that the Anakims are there, and that the cities are great and fenced. In other words, if I'm going to receive God's best in this life, he says there are still burdens to be carried and battles to be fought. I'm not here for an easy time, he said. I'm here for the blessings of the Lord. And at 85 years of age, he's choosing a place that's infested with giants. He's looking the hardest assignment imaginable. No one else was asking for it. No one else wanted that parcel of land. No one else wanted the responsibility of taking on the giants and pushing them out. There are very few that step forward and say, "Give me the tough ones, please. Give me the hard assignments. Give me the difficult tasks. I'll go and deal with the difficult issues." We want the crown, but we don't want the cross that goes with it. We want the glory, but we don't want to put in the effort. And our Christianity has become one of convenience rather than one of commitment. We'll serve God as long as it doesn't cost us too much or inconvenience us too much. Caleb is of a different type altogether. He's asking for a tough assignment with mountains and giants and fenced cities. He wants the blessing, and he knows that such blessings do not come from easy assignments. And even as he asks for these things, you can see that he's counting on the Lord's preservation. He says, "Behold, the Lord hath kept me alive these 45 years. He says, "It's no accident, Joshua, that God has allowed me to live to 85 years of age, because there's a work for me still to do. The Lord has preserved me because there are things that he had had me accomplish for him." And Joshua, I'm just as healthy today as what I was when I spied out Canaan. I want to do God's will. I want to do it God's way. I'm still signed up to do something in God's work. We all live at the pleasure of an eternal God. And the reason that we are here, that we're still alive, is because the Lord has something for us to do. We are eternal in this world until our work is complete. Never forget that. And the reason that you're still here and alive is because God has a purpose for you and a plan for you. He has a work for you still to do for his glory. And Joshua, that's what Caleb said. The Lord has kept me alive all this time because he's got a work for me to do. Don't think about hanging up your tools just yet, or sitting back in a soft chair for a life of ease. If the Lord has you here, then there's work for you to do. Now, the work may change. You may be called to do different tasks today than what you did maybe yesterday. But there's a work nonetheless. Caleb is counting upon the Lord's promise to help him accomplish that work. You'll notice in verse 6, he says to Joshua, "Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea." He repeats it again in verse 12 and again in verse 10. The Lord has promised me. The Lord has promised. Well, what did God promise? The Lord promised him in verse 9. "Through Moses, surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever." I believe that the land that Caleb is asking for, the mountain that he desires, is the very place that he spied out when he went into the land to begin with. "Place whereon thy feet have trodden, that will be your inheritance." And he's holding on to that promise. 45 years he's been holding on to that promise. This has been the Lord's promise. He says, "I want the fulfillment of it. This is my claim for inheritance, the land that God has given me." In Deuteronomy 1 and verse 36, God said of Caleb, "To him will I give the land that he hath trodden upon." That's his basis for claiming God's promise. For 45 years he's waited for the fulfillment of it. And now that the day has come, he's not going to miss out. His confidence is in the Lord and in his promises, that he that has promised is faithful. And notice his devotion. When he says, in reference to his human strength in verse 11, that "I'm as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go in and to go out." But now, he's not relying on his physical strength. He's relying on heavenly strength. The portion of land that he desired was filled with giants and walled cities. And he says, "Now give me this mountain, if so be the Lord will be with me." If the Lord is with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. He's ready to fight for the Lord because he knows the Lord will fight for him. He knows that he will not possess the land by his own strength, but by the Lord's promise. And he knew that God was more able to do what he could not do for himself. Remember hearing the story of a little boy and girl, a brother and a sister. They were doing their homework one evening. And the little boy kept saying, I can't do it. I can't do it. I don't know how. I can't do it. And the little girl was getting fed up listening to him and says, you remember the verse we learnt in Sunday school? I can do all things through Christ which strengthened me. And he turned to her and said, well, you do it then. Not our attitude. You do it. Caleb's attitude is this: God is able. I may not be able, but God is able. And what is God able to do? Well, God is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. It works in us. There's no limitation to God's power working in and through us. We can take that mountain. We can take the walled cities. We can defeat the giants that are before us. Our God has not changed. His power has not been diminished. His ability is what it ever was and ever will be. Therefore, there is no problem that he cannot solve, and no prayer that he cannot answer, and no person that he cannot save. And without him, we can do nothing, but with him we can do all things through Christ which strengthens us. We want to be able to say with Caleb, Lord, give me that mountain, that seemingly difficult situation, that problem that seems so vast that everyone is tiptoeing around it and looking for easier assignments. Lord, give me the difficult ones and give me the faith to see it through. We can look around us at the town of Kingston and think, there's a place with multitudes of people that do not know the Lord, and many of them are hard against the gospel. Lord, give me that mountain. Give me that task. Give me that faith to see the job accomplished in your name. Give me the mountain. You see, Caleb, in his first years, man of personal faith and conviction, in his finest years as a great warrior for the Lord, trusting in the Lord to accomplish great things. What about his final years? As the sun begins to go down in Caleb's life, he's not forgotten by God or his people. He's still pressing on. The Bible's filled of examples of people who started well but fell away in the end. You know, it's not how you start, it's how you finish sometimes. We don't want to be like King Saul or Lot or Demas, who started well but fell away. Caleb was a man who not only started well, but he finished well. And God honored him and the people honored him. And he was given eventually that place to settle, that little bit of real estate in the land of Canaan, that mountain that he had called. He was given it by assignment and by inheritance. And if you look at verses 13 and 14, that Joshua blessed him and gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron, for an inheritance. There you are, Caleb. You want the mountain? It's yours. Go and take it for God. Go in his strength and in his power. Take it and claim it and have your inheritance. And he not only took the assignment, but you'll notice that he completed it. He completed it. You notice in verse 15, the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, and the land, that is the land of Hebron, had rest from war. He completed the task. He routed the enemy. You see, after the many wars and battles that were had in the land of Canaan, and the land was separated and divided by inheritance, and the tribes were to go and to finish the task of subduing the enemy and putting them out of the land, do you know what we read oftentimes in the book of Joshua? That there remaineth yet very much land to be possessed. We read that on a number of occasions. Nevertheless, the children of Israel expelled not. They didn't put out all the enemy, but Caleb, he completed his task. He followed the Lord fully, He was victorious in his fight, and he accomplished all that God had given him to do. And he named his new inheritance, his parcel of land, Hebron. You know what Hebron means? It means fellowship. He's in full fellowship with God. And the reason that he was able to accomplish that right to the end of his days is because of the testimony that's made against his name, that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. That phrase is used 6 times in Scripture regarding the life of Caleb. He wholly followed the Lord. He was wholehearted in his following of God. Some Bible experts tell us that the name Caleb means dog. It's not a very pleasant name. I don't think we call any of our children that today, but we can certainly see if we take the thought of a dog being man's best friend, his faithful follower, that's certainly what Caleb was. He was faithful to his master. He followed the Lord fully, wholeheartedly, all his days. And while others were filled with doubt, he was filled with determination. When others had cause to fear, he had reason to trust. And while others were overwhelmed, he went and overcome the land for the Lord. He was wholly following the Lord God of Israel. I can honestly say, after all these years, that I've never met anyone who followed the Lord and trusted in him and believed in his promises and served him all their days that ever lived to regret it. I've never met anyone who, having served the Lord all those years, looked back over their life and said, I made a mistake and I wish I hadn't done that. I've met plenty of people who haven't followed the Lord to look back with regret and tears in their eyes at the lives that they've wasted, but not those who followed the Lord. It pays to follow the Lord, to trust him, to believe in him, to serve him, and to gain the inheritance that he has for his faithful followers. And we can walk in that fellowship with God. We can enjoy his presence, and we can have his blessings. And we know, of course, that the greater inheritance is yet to come. Oh, that we would be like Caleb to the end of our days, wholeheartedly following the Lord. I was going to speak a little about his legacy and his generations to come, but you know, I think I'll leave that to next week. The legacy that he left. He left a legacy for his family to follow in. And they became men and women of faith also. But I think we'll look at that next week. We'll come back to that. Let me just leave you again with our text, verse 12. Now therefore give me this mountain. And to take it as an example of a request, a petition, to bring to the Lord, that's asking for him to intervene in a great way, in a mighty way. Some difficult assignment that seems impossible to many, that we trust that God will accomplish for his own great name's sake. You can think of some difficult situation, some difficult person, some obstacle that seems too great to do anything about. And may the Lord give us the faith to claim that mountain and to go forward in his will and under his command and see those mountains conquered and the enemies routed and a sweet fellowship in the things of God commenced. Give us that mountain. Let's bow in prayer.